I'm opening. We have an eye, part of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week's dissection, Gone Girl, directed by David Fincher. His latest book adaptation, written by Gillian Flynn, who also wrote the screenplay. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Roxy Stryer, rocking out Roxy.
Oh, I love this song.
But you know what this song needs?
What's that?
More cowbell.
Thank you very much, Dimitri Pano. Sorry.
All right,
let's jump
right
in.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing well, very well. Let's jump right in. What do we think, Gone Girl?
Oh, I thought it was great. I thought it was awesome. There was just one particular aspect of it that I didn't love, but other than that, I was all in.
Almost a perfect movie for you?
Almost a perfect movie.
All right, nice. So you're probably agreeing with the critics as well. So it's 8.7, 9, whatever it
is. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, great. Dimitri?
I was a really big fan of this movie. Mm-hmm. Right now, it probably lands somewhere in my top 10 for this year.
Wow.
I don't know exactly where. I'm still, like, right now, I'm playing around. There's still a ton of great movies to view.
And there's a lot for it to sit with you. You know, it's a big movie.
And but I'm a big David Fincher fan. I think this was a great... I read the book. Mm-hmm. And I really think this is a great adaptation. One of the best. I really think that from page to screen...
Right.
Gillian Flynn and probably David Fincher, there was probably some help there. I think they really captured everything that was in the book, and they did it. Like, there wasn't a thing where I said, oh, God damn it, they
I
changed
wish they,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and...
You felt like they were honest to the words.
Yeah, and well, even more important... Go ahead.
No, I'm just really glad that one of us on the panel read the book. So, Dimitri, we're going to rely heavily on you, because Roxy and I have not read the book.
Yeah, and...
But we're great people, so
you
it's
are,
okay.
And great dissection. So, and I'm glad to help and bring that part of this to this dissection. The one thing that I was really amazed at, because again, reading the book and going into the movie, this is a story that relies on twists. Mm-hmm. So it would be like if you went into Psycho. Mm-hmm. Knowing that, you know, knowing when Janet Leigh is going to die, you know, and so I knew everything that was going to happen and how it was going to, you know, when it was going to happen about. So for me, there wasn't like a shock value, but the book, it's diabolically delicious in a sense. Okay. And
like Lucky Charms.
Yes. They're not diabolical. Yeah. They're magically delicious.
Yeah, of course.
But,
Heart, Stars, and Rainbows.
The movie.
Cobra's
movie itself. The book itself, like, there were some visceral, emotional parts to the book that I felt like as I was watching the movie, it hit the
You experienced
same
them
notes,
as one when you saw
I
the
was
movie.
Like,
that's
which
great.
I was surprised. Yeah. And it's nice and welcome that David Fincher and the cast was able to bring that out in me.
You know, I think that's really surprising, especially because I thought that everybody who read the book wouldn't be as shocked. It was like a I See Dead People moment for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, as I said, I wasn't shocked at the twist, but there are elements of the book and the movie that sort of kind of make you, like, you don't feel good. This is not a story about nice people or good people for that matter.
But it sounds like you felt as satisfied watching the film, even though you knew it was going to happen, as you did when you read the book
and
you didn't know what
And whatever emotions I had towards certain characters, so watching it play out,
very faithful,
I felt the same. It was very faithful, I felt. And there wasn't a whole heck of a lot I can pick at. Now, I don't know when we'll talk about what I named the Fincher Flynn lie.
We'll talk about that shortly.
But, we'll talk
about the lie of the century.
The lie of the decade.
All right. Well, let me jump in saying that I was a really big fan of three quarters of this movie and I was an unfan of about a quarter.
Which quarter?
Unfan.
I was very unhappy with certain parts of it. It kind of ruined the experience for me because there was so much of it that I really liked that when certain things just didn't work for me. And whereas in other movies, when you watch the movie and you haven't read the book, the movie actually makes you want to go read the book.
Sure, yeah.
In this
case,
this movie did not make me want to go read the book because I'm not interested at all in seeing and reading that book. So for that part, that didn't work for me. But let's get into the Fincher Flynn.
I can ask, what John brings up a good point, because it sometimes will happen to me if I haven't read the book prior and I see the movie, and sometimes if the movie is really good, I'll like maybe want to read the book. Did you have that feeling?
Because you know, hadn't read the book. No, I didn't particularly want to read the book. That's not the feeling I got, but mm-hmm. I don't frequently get that feeling. Mm-hmm. Okay. I will admit mm-hmm. that I am a movie TV person. Junkie. Yes, junkie. It takes a lot for me to be like, let me go read this book, especially okay, now that this is one of those book, one of those stories that does rely so much on twists. I don't feel like I would be as satisfied. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be mm-hmm. a page turner for me because gotcha. Of that. Mm-hmm. I know what happened.
Sure. Okay.
So that's how I'm feeling.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so let's get to the Fincher Flynn lie.
Well, you know, again, the Fincher Flynn lie, I call it, because the book relies
on it. Let's be alliterative. It's Fincher Flynn fib.
Okay. Okay. Oh, the Fincher Flynn fib.
That's so hard.
Classic Fincher Flynn fib.
No, it's the Fincher Flynn flim flam.
Oh,
there we go.
I like that.
All right, let's move on. Let's get
okay. So you know, you read the book, and you know, it has this ending that I don't know. It made me feel dirty. When I got to the end of the book, I was just like, I
like you
kind
wanted
of,
to wash off all the blood.
I have it on like my Nook, and mm-hmm. I shut my reader down and like pushed mm-hmm. it away from me. I was wow. like, oh, I'm like,
did you like
totally,
it?
Did I like the ending or the book?
Yeah,
well,
did you?
I was so
just
into
did you enjoy
this,
it?
I enjoyed it, but the ending, like when I was done, I just sort of felt disgusted because, like, and because it's a page turner. Uh-huh. If it is a really good page turner, it's a great mystery, it's a good crime drama, and Gillian Flynn has written great characters, right? Which I really thought translated great on screen.
The characters
very
were amazing.
Good. It's a very character driven, and it takes you on this roller coaster. It's like, oh, I'm going to hate this person. This person sucks. Oh, that person's not so bad. That person really sucks. And mm-hmm. it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I love the right. fluctuating allegiances. I thought that was terrific.
And for me, I hadn't read that in a book. And the way that Gillian Flynn just puts these pieces of a puzzle together, yeah. I thought was amazing.
But that's not what the Fincher Flynn fib is.
The Fincher Flynn fib is that they came out and publicly said yeah. that the ending that they... There was big change.
But she wrote
the
a different ending.
She wrote a different ending now.
Because she wanted to surprise viewers who had already read
right.
the book.
And to that point, his other adaptation, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo,
right.
also they played around with the ending. Mm-hmm. And he said that they were going to play around with the ending. So it's not Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, his mm-hmm. version, has a bit of a different ending than mm-hmm. what the Stieg Larsson novel has. Mm. So when that came out, I was like going, okay, he sort of played around with the ending. I'm curious to see. I'm always in for the movie to begin with.
Right. Right.
But now I have this added curiosity. How's he going to change the ending? I want to see what they're going to do.
And what did they do?
Absolutely nothing.
Totally. Like, say it again.
Absolutely nothing. It was just
so
like...
So talk about a red herring.
Oh my yeah. God. I went with two other people. We had all read the book and we're waiting for like, okay.
Where's
what
the
are
twist
they
at the end?
And like, is he going to kill her? Is she going to kill him? Or are they going to be lovey-dovey? What the hell's going
to
happen?
But it's in like, all fairness, that wouldn't have been true to your... you love because it was so close to the adaptation. If they had changed the ending, would you have loved it as much? Because it wouldn't have been as true to the book.
It's a good question. But I was primed. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like
so
they
changed
the ending as
it.
A surprise. Mm-hmm. Like, have you ever... I don't know if maybe you have read a book and then maybe you've read a book.
Hey, Roxy, maybe you've read a book at some point.
Or they changed the ending and you didn't know that they were changing the
right.
ending.
Yeah, that
like,
might
this
be.
Was like,
and
they
you're
were
outraged.
Priming. Right. And you go, how the hell? No, yeah. the shark dies at the end. Like, it can't live. No. So you'd be upset. And so if I'm primed, mm-hmm. because I already know how, like, literally how it ends. Mm-hmm. I'm primed for an ending, so that sort of kind of softens the blow. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have made a shitty ending, but at least they would have...
They would
have
told you ahead of time.
So. Told me ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's what they were sort of kind of doing. Like, mm-hmm. not to say they were going to make a shitty ending, mm-hmm. but I was expecting, oh, okay, so far this movie is going beat for beat the way the book is, but I'm going to get something different at the end. Mm-hmm. And then when it didn't happen, I was like, what the hell?
Okay, but say Nick Dunn got up and walked out. Say that was the ending. He was like, peace, I'm out of here. You're crazy.
Yeah, right.
And would you have been like, oh, that's great that they changed it like that? Or yeah, would you have been like, that's a way worse ending?
No, had they done it, mm-hmm. had they done it in a thought out way, mm-hmm. I would have been like, okay, I get the ending. And I would have gone, okay, it's a movie. It's not the book. And they said they were going to make the changes. Mm-hmm. I would have been okay. Had it been, you know, a thoughtful, smart way and like whatever they decided to do, which mm-hmm. they didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I was just like, they still end up together. Yeah. She still says that she's pregnant. Mm-hmm. He ends up, you know, because it's going to be a
very faithful adaptation.
Very faithful adaptation. You won't. Yeah. The Fincher
Flynn Flam
Flam
Flam Flam Fib.
Yeah, I, yeah.
For sure. So,
and I'm curious to know if, like, there were three of us, we felt the same way. I'm curious to know if other readers of the book, like, who heard the same thing. Because it wasn't like they said it once.
Mm-hmm. This was multiple
they
times.
They're perpetuating this thing for, okay.
So but God bless weird. Them, but they burned their card, because now I won't believe
yeah,
them.
It was so strange, because I didn't read it, but as I walked out of the theater, mm-hmm. I heard a bunch of people talking, saying like, oh, I wonder what the end of the book is. It was supposed mm-hmm. to be so different. Now I've got to go read it to see what the end of the book is.
Oh,
so
wow.
In the reverse way, how people are going to see this because they think the ending's different, I think people are probably going to start to read the book because they think the ending is different.
I didn't have that experience at the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's too bad.
No, I didn't. Here's what I had at the end of the movie. Thank God that's over.
Oh, gosh. Because you had a problem with the length.
I did have a problem with the length only because for a large part of the movie, I was going, why are we taking so long? Let's get this. And I'm not a fan of, I don't need quick cuts. I don't mind long movies. Sure. I actually enjoy them. I mean, they're lots of fun. But this one did not work for me in that way. I thought the pacing was slow and plodding. And it's like, why are we taking so long? And also I didn't like the ending at all. Yeah. And it wasn't fulfilling or satisfying in any way. I wanted it to end when she came back after killing her former boyfriend and she's all bloody and all the press is out there and he says, "You fucking bitch," and she faints in his arms and the camera goes up. We have that nice shot, aerial shot.
It would be a very dramatic ending.
I wanted
ending.
It to end right there. I'm going, awesome.
Yeah.
I wanted it to end right. And I thought, that's great. Cause then you don't know how they work this, resolve it. And I thought it was great that you had to figure it out yourself. And everything that happened after that, I was bored by and I didn't care about.
I see what you're saying. I do, because it did end so abruptly that it really could have ended at any point, and I think people would have been happy with it ending there. But I wouldn't have been, knowing what comes after, because this was probably my favorite part of the movie, watching them in the shower and the interaction. Uh-huh. It's nothing to do with the fact that they're naked, so I know that everybody's thinking. I love what happened. And then I know people think that I'm crazy, but my favorite thing is that I think the whole point is that he's still in love with her. He wants her to stay. I think a very small part has to do with the fact that she's with child and it happens to be his. I think that he is freaking in love with her still, which is
even
unbelievable.
I think you're crazy.
But wait, but even after the fact that he's had the affair and he doesn't seem to love her at all.
I think he's re-in love with her now.
Like
she's
re-in love with him because
she did
when
this,
she sees him on TV.
Yes, she sees
him on
TV. So
that's reignited what brought them together.
She sees him on TV, and she's sitting and with Desi, and she thinks, wow, that's the man I fell in love with. And she comes back, and she's a crazy bitch, and he's like, That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. He calls her. He's like, you're a big, and he calls her the C word, and she says, but I'm the C word you married. And he's like, yeah, you are. That's really how I felt.
Wow,
I felt like he goes to his sister's place. The sister's sitting there, and she's like,
he
crying on the floor.
He looked like a beaten man, though, at that point.
No.
Like, he didn't look like a man that was like, sis,
but,
I'm really
but
in love.
To her point, that's also the woman who bolstered him and brought him up and made him the best he could be.
Absolutely.
So I understand your point. I don't necessarily agree with it because I don't.
But
see them being in love?
She melts down. The sister melts down on the floor. By the way, she did such an amazing job, but we'll talk about that later.
Right.
She was incredible. She melts down on the floor and she looks and she knows her brother. They're twins. She knows him and she
says,
you want to stay with her. She says, you want this. And he doesn't deny it because he's so weird and in love.
No, he
and that's what it is.
All right, well, that would
because
be
because they even make it a point in that dialogue, too.
Yeah.
He goes, it's going to be 18 years. She goes, you want to stay in this for 18 years.
And he wants to stay in it. He wants to stay in it for longer.
I don't think so. Well, I don't think he wants to be there, okay, period. I thought he was like, feats don't fail me now.
Yeah.
Fucking bitch. Like, you threw a kid at me.
Because he just
went over me. If he leaves her after knowing that she's pregnant with his child, mm-hmm. it's like, he just got through being crucified.
Right, but that's my point.
He's not going to take that again.
See, I disagree. I think, what else could she do to him that could be worse?
Nothing.
He's already been through it all.
There's
He's been
nothing.
Vilified. Well, how bad? Look, I'm already there.
If he wanted to walk out, there are it's 2014. There are so many couples that share a child and are not together. It happens.
Yeah, but this happened in front of the media.
Yeah,
but she came back. Like,
so they slander him. He's been slandered.
That was my point.
It's not like somebody's going to not hire him after that.
There's only so much that you're going to take. I'm telling you.
No, I agree with that. But that's also a good point. There is only so much you can take. So no way would you stay in that relationship. I'm not putting up with this.
So he stays because he's got to stay for a different reason than the fact that she's with child, because that's not enough for the reason to stay. Yeah, but then he could still raise the child and not be with her, but that's not what he's doing. He's staying because he loves her.
No way. No,
which makes a great argument.
All.
I had a hard time just believing the idea because
I don't buy that at all.
Whatever they have together,
because
it's
you
not
wouldn't
really,
have that feeling.
Well, it's not what I would consider love, and maybe it works for them in some weird, twisted.
No, it's not the love that you want, but it's definitely love.
I don't know. I can't say. I guess it would depend upon your definition of love.
Yeah.
That is just so twisted.
It's right next to hatred. Same family.
And again, and I had that feeling when I read the book, and that was part of the thing. It's like, motherfucker, it's like you thought he was out, and you thought that he was going to, it wasn't bad enough that she got mugged by those two, hicks. It wasn't bad enough that she was being, held prisoner because she had nowhere else to go and she had nowhere else to turn and whatnot. And then, she comes back and you just know that, they're already, the cops know that she lied about everything. He knows they're about to, nail her to the wall. And then she's woven another web and throws this other card down that says, I've just trumped you. Go ahead, because I love you. You know you love me, and now we're going to have a kid.
I didn't buy any.
And he throws her against the wall,
and
that's
love. Oh, my God, that scene.
That's love.
Okay, I will say, I jumped at that scene. The thud her head of that wall. I was
I'm thinking, wow, are they mic'd yet? Because that's not good. What's going to go on here? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I walked out of this. I went to see it with my best friend, and afterwards he said, I feel like that wasn't the right move. And I go, what? He goes, I don't think I really feel like this wasn't the right move that time. I was like, well, that's because you're a good human being. Right. And as we know about Nick Dunn, as he said himself, he's not a good guy. Yeah. I think that's the best part. I keep saying the best part about this movie. There are a lot of great parts. One of the really, really great parts about the movie is the fact that he isn't this perfect guy.
No.
We are not rooting for him the whole time because he's not a good dude, but he's also not a murderer.
No.
And that's the point. No. You can't get the death penalty because you're a bad dude. You can get the death penalty because you're a murderer. I don't want to see you murdered because you're not the best guy, you know? So I'm kind of rooting for him. You go, not such great dude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
in his
that's
flaws,
cool.
though, are like, and again, I'm not speaking for the whole male race, but whatever
gender.
Gender, I'm sorry, yes. It wasn't for the whole, male gender. Yes, he cheated on his wife. Mm-hmm. But you could see, again, later on, how he fell out of love with his wife. They didn't have the perfect marriage, which I think that this movie says that there's no such thing. You know, there are undercurrents.
Well, there are things a little closer than this, probably.
Yeah, or better, yeah.
Just a little.
Maybe.
And again, his flaws, they weren't so bad that you would sentence a man to death. So what she concocts and what she puts him through. And you also have to remember, this was one thing that she was going to let him off the hook. She was moving away.
She was going to let him off the hook?
No.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were saying she wasn't going to let him off the hook. She was going to let him die.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, she wanted him to die.
Absolutely.
Which makes her psycho and makes her a killer, which is why I wasn't surprised that she ends up murdering somebody.
I wasn't surprised at that either.
And again, Ben Affleck's character, Nick, he even says, I just said what I knew you wanted to hear. Yeah. Like, you knew none of it was. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, I can live with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fine. And it's like, that makes that character even scarier.
Yeah, which is another reason why I just didn't buy any of the ending. I thought, there's no way he's staying with her. Just didn't buy it. Mm. It didn't work for me at all.
But
I thought the jump for her to be becoming a murderer was too big of a leap for me. I didn't see that. I mean, I understand the, obviously she's, what's the word?
Crazy?
Well, she's crazy, yes. And it's getting worse and worse. Oh. And that because of her first boyfriend, she does this. The second boyfriend, she gets arrested. For, he's...
It's escalating.
It's escalating. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for. But I just went, I just didn't buy the whole... I didn't see why she killed him. I didn't see it. I was like, I didn't buy it. I just thought it was like, what?
It was the only way she could get out of that house.
And I don't agree with that. I was like, are you kidding me?
I was kidnapped.
She's so meticulous at planning, and she could figure out this whole thing. Oh, she's thwarted by a lake house?
Here's the deal. It wasn't,
she could just walk away.
It wasn't the only way she could get out of the house.
Not if he was still alive.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. It wasn't the only way she could get out of the house, but it was the only way she could go back to Nick, was by having this alibi. And at this point, she sees him on TV. Mm-hmm. She's crazy and decides, wow, I want that life back. Mm-hmm. I want to be with that man. Right. So in order to do that, she couldn't have kept Desi alive, because Desi... even if he wasn't going to be violent with her or keep her there, he would have been like,
yeah, I get it logically. I get that. That's a great argument, and I agree with you. Logically, it has to happen. I understand, but for me, that was plot driven, not really character driven. I didn't see the escalation going to the point where it's one thing to get a guy arrested, but everything she does is removed from this. She's out of the equation, so it's not up close and personal. And usually when, cutting somebody, killing somebody with a knife, it's very, I mean, that's up close. And I didn't see her character doing that stuff make me believe that she could go from that, from fucking with these guys and manipulating them like crazy, and just slashing some guys
in the blood. Had done.
I didn't believe it.
It's interesting.
Too much of a jump for me, character-wise.
It's interesting you say that, though, because I felt like she was more of the, I'm going to drug you kind of girl.
That's what I mean.
That's what happens.
She drugs him.
In the
book, that's really interesting.
But she kills him.
Like you said.
That's what I mean. Yeah, if they'd done something like that, don't get me wrong. I mean, the way they did it, I thought it was terrific. It was extremely, it's like, whoa.
Is beautiful
what?
The right word?
No, it's not beautiful, but it was visceral. It was amazing for film and all, and it was kind of disgusting, the whole thing. But I just go, I would have believed the drugging or something else.
Yeah.
I would have believed that.
It was so hands-on for her when she's had such a hands-off approach
to a lot of things.
It was
too big of a leap
In the book, she not only has him tied up, mm-hmm. she does drug him. And after he's drugged, she slits his throat. So I don't know what's worse. I mean, to me,
I don't know.
How it was handled, again, on film, I thought Fincher did a great, great job of doing it. And... all right, because we had, after watching the movie too, there was a little bit of discussion, like, did you find that viscerally, like, she was totally into the blood, like, because mm-hmm. she was continued to go on with the act, so to speak. Right. Did you find that that charged her up in a sense?
I couldn't pay attention because of what a bummer having Neil Patrick Harris be there was for me at that time.
All right, so let's get into why that is.
I mean, all right. So my biggest issue with this film was Neil Patrick Harris being in it, which I feel very guilty about saying because mm-hmm. I think he is unbelievably talented, and I love him. I'm a fan of his.
And he's coming in right now. He's a special guest.
No, seriously, I always think, like, I feel bad because I think he's awesome. If I ever met him, I think he's awesome. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really, really talented person. I think that he was... doomed for this role. It was so the wrong role for him. He really, really was, it made me dislike this character in a way that wasn't supposed to be how I was feeling. Mm. I wanted this character to be creepy. I wanted him to be weird. Mm. I wanted him to not be Barney from How I Met Your Mother, in a suit and all put together and kind of handsome and endearing enough. And I just wanted to just shake and make him like stick out his tongue or something, or do something weird or creepy with that crazy eyes.
Because I have to say, I love that what you said up the creep factor, because I didn't get it. Meaning, I understood why she, her other boyfriend, when she has him arrested for rape or whatever it is, and he pleads guilty. merely because he backed off from her, and that's how I thought it was great that we got to see that scene, because you got to see
awesome, and that scene was
terrific,
awesome,
and it really told us who she was, and I thought it was fabulous. I thought it was great that Nick Dunn sought him out. He was driving the film at that point, which is fabulous.
I was expecting him to come back at some point.
Exactly.
Never
did. I hated the fact that they dropped that storyline. It was great that we saw this former.
I think the storyline served its purpose.
I never got to see why Neil Patrick, whatever his character's name is. Why did she leave him? What was that about? And you know, because I thought, okay, this guy's a little bit off, but he wasn't crazy enough, or I didn't see him being crazy enough.
He didn't still love her.
And I was like, why did she leave this? What was? And I want to know how she did, why she did, because they did such a good job with the other story. And then I couldn't see for a second why she felt trapped in the lake house.
Okay,
I was like, what?
The story is written so that of the two ex-boyfriends, one of them's still in love with her, one of them isn't. And she burned both of them. So the one that isn't still in love with her is sane, because who would be in love with you after what you did? And the one who is still in love with her is insane. And I didn't see him being insane. I saw him being a normal dude.
See, I didn't find him normal at all. And I don't think he was crazy enough for me.
And why would you? He's everything you want your husband to be.
See, I disagree, because I felt the creep factor. It's like, oh, I'm going to take you to my lake house. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, security cameras in. Oh, you can't leave. I'm going to lock you in here. Like, that was creepy to me.
What do you mean I can't lock you in here? Like, what do you mean she couldn't leave?
She couldn't. Okay, again, you have to remember that back in Nick Dunn's world, he's about to go into jail and be brought up in the death. Okay. Because they don't know that she's still alive.
Right.
Okay. There's very few people. There's only actually two people who know that she's alive. Actually, three. If you want to count the campsite or the motel hell place.
Oh.
So, yeah, because they figure out who she is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, if she were to walk away, then Desi can go, hey guys, she's still alive. It blows her entire plan.
Or they might say he's just a former guy that, remember, he's already been painted as a bad guy.
Who, Desi?
Desi, yeah, because, you know, because she painted him as a stalker or whatever.
Yeah.
So it could be all nonsense. They have to believe that, and then where's the evidence that she's there?
But it raises a thread. Now, the other guy they can't bring in, because again, you have to remember, everybody thinks that she's dead and that Nick Dunn did it, okay?
Right.
Their whole thing was they couldn't use the other guy, and don't forget, the other guy's life
was... Who's the other guy?
The guy at the bar.
The guy at the bar that
Nick Dunn meets.
Oh, the other boyfriend.
The other boyfriend.
Okay.
So the other guy, his life is completely ruined because he's on a
sex offender list.
He can't get a job. I mean,
he can't get a date. He can't get a job. Nothing. She crushed his life.
Yeah. So and bringing him in, like, what's he going to say? He can't prove Nick Dunn's innocence. So that's the only thing that shows for the story point is that
she's done this
understand
before.
She's manipulated. Right. She's done this. No. They know that. And
clearly.
That gives the Tyler but Perry, that gives the lawyer at least.
I was unsatisfied by not knowing. See, it was great. I love the scene with in the bar with Nick and this former guy who gets arrested, all the other stuff with the sexual rape, whatever the hell he is. And then there wasn't anything about what she did, why she left Neil Patrick's hair. And I was so fascinated by that. I couldn't wait to hear this story. Because she's kept in touch with them, and she's, you know, and why, and I was like, it was just completely unsatisfying for me because
I agree.
It was set up to be like, oh, this is going to be even better.
But it was so weird because we got more of the other ex-boyfriend's story, and he got way less screen time, and we got less of Neil Patrick Harris's story, and he got way more screen time. And I just kept waiting for the what's going on here.
Yeah. And there was nothing to it.
And I also expected the other ex-boyfriend to maybe join the gang.
Or
like,
something.
Let's take this girl down. But I said, I loved this film. So to me, just this one aspect didn't kill the film for me. I just didn't like his portrayal of the character. I don't even think that's his fault. I think it was casting.
That didn't work. I understand why it had to happen because you wanted to bring Neil's character back into. But I didn't buy for a second the whole thing with her at the cabin lake, whatever the hell where she is, and she meets up with the. Whatever her name, Greta is her name, I think, the character, and, you know, they're out playing miniature golf, right. And then she's again thwarted by a money belt that falls off her.
I mean,
yeah. I just was like, what?
Honestly,
that's the thing that's going to get her in trouble. And I understand logically we need to have her money taken away, so she has to go back to Neil, but it just seemed way too convenient. Was for me, it was completely unbelievable. This woman was amazingly
where is she supposed to keep
impeccable.
The money?
No, I understand that she has to keep it in her money belt. Then yeah, great, they fall off. But I didn't buy for a second that as soon as she realized they knew that money's in there and it was so important for her survival that she didn't leave right then. I did not believe for a second, because first of all, film time, we went to another scene, and by the time we came back to her, it was hours later, day later. I don't know what the hell it was, but it didn't work for me at all, because I said she would have been gone.
And again, I'm gonna bring up the point. All right, so let's just say, going off your supposition that as soon as that happens, they mm-hmm. finish up their game of miniature golf, and mm-hmm. she gets in the car and feets don't mm-hmm. fail me now. I'm out of here. Okay, mm-hmm. It is suggested that couple, that Greta and Jeff, mm-hmm. sort of kind of have an idea as to who she is.
No, but
okay. No, they
not
really
then.
Don't.
Not
they
at do that because, moment.
They have an idea just the fact that she's somebody.
She's somebody,
right.
but they mention it, because even Greta says something when they jump her.
But I didn't believe that for a second. These doughheads are going to figure that out. I didn't buy it for a second.
I don't think you had to be. Again, I don't think you had
didn't
to
Didn't believe
be.
It.
You didn't
I
have
didn't
to be Sherlock
it. And,
Holmes.
And, like, they would go to the cops, and the cops would believe them.
Well, why wouldn't they? Because there are fingerprints. See,
what do they get out of it?
What does who get out of it?
They're not friends with the cops. It's not like they're not going to be looked at with any kind of scrutiny. Of course they are. They're not going to believe them.
All they have to do is go into the cabin where all her fingerprints and everything. She had to go back and start cleaning and getting the hell out of there.
I don't disagree with that part. Yeah. What I disagree with was film time. I just didn't buy it. It was like, oh, please, why is this taking so damn long?
Here's what I will say, though. If she is a killer, which we see that she is, if she's willing to kill, why then would she not be willing to go after these two people? You know, I would think that maybe her thought process would be, they just took my money, I'm going to go kill them.
Yeah, but there's no out. Again, she is trying to stay anonymous.
Yeah,
she
but,
it, needs
but
to
that's
be
to the
ghost.
Point. They know and if you say, if, and she hint, they hint that they know who she is,
okay.
Why doesn't she kill him?
Again,
yeah, I'm just curious
that
now because I'm thinking about...
Because there's no alibi for her.
At this point, she doesn't want to go back to Nick, though.
No, I understand, but there's nothing. Like, you don't want to... She doesn't want to attract more attention to herself than she may
Yeah, but you're making the point. These people know who I am. That could cause me huge load of trouble.
And killing them could also start a manhunt and tracking her down.
I will say that at this point, I do think she went home, realized they might have some suspicion who she is, and... started cleaning, cleaned the whole place,
right.
And by the time she was on her way out, she wasn't going to chill there. She was on her way out.
Right.
So I'm not surprised with the amount of time that took, but what I am surprised about is that she didn't retaliate, because now I'm thinking about it, she's dangerous. They took her money, and her first thought is, oh, I'll call Desi? No, I would think her first thought would be, I'm an independent woman, and I'm going to go get my money back because I can kill them. She is somebody who's willing to kill.
And at that point, it doesn't serve that character. It doesn't serve Amazing Amy any good because, again, it could end up putting more heat on her. Because if she wants to get the hell out of Dodge, leaving a body, leaving a trail of bodies isn't the way to be anonymous and isn't the way to, like, escape. Yes, you're killing your witnesses, but... You're still setting people up to go searching for you.
For me,
because she was seen by because then
totally
she'd have to no because then she'd have to kill the guy behind the counter at the hotel because he saw who
you
she
guys
was.
Have given me and a then, lot to think about.
And then like you
I don't
know,
think
then
for
that
a second
guy,
that they the idea that they knew who she was I didn't believe the idea that she didn't
about,
take off right away I didn't believe
I did like when she spit in her
was,
soda though
I thought it was just
that was funny
for
or
me
alcohol,
it just it came across as a convenient plot point in order to get her destitute so she has to go call Neil Patrick Harris
but I'm going.
Come out
but it
any
doesn't
kind
make
of reality.
If she killed them, cops get involved, right? And then,
yeah, but she's already gone.
Yeah, but she's already gone. But they
girl,
she has gone, girl. Yeah, she's already gone. But the people who work at the hotel,
but you're
have
assuming
a great
that,
description
but,
of who she. Of
I know
who, what she looks like,
but nobody's recognized her yet. And I pretty good. And you're assuming that her fingerprints are on file, which I don't believe.
Well, I'm not saying that. No.
So if they found her fingerprints, what's that going to do? If her fingerprints are on file,
she has fingerprints as Amy Dunn, as Amy.
Great. You get fingerprints, but where are you going to check them? If she's not in the database, and why would she be? She hasn't been arrested for anything, as far as we know. So, big deal. They have fingerprints, but they can't match it
but
to
they,
anything.
Okay, again, you're missing. They have the clerk behind the desk has a description. He doesn't know that it's Amy Dunn. Doesn't give it. That doesn't. You're taking that out of the. He just knows there's this.
But she doesn't look anything like Amy Dunn.
I'm not saying that he's fingering her as Amy Dunn.
Whoa,
I'm
let's
saying,
not use that term.
I'm saying that he's pointing. He's saying yes. It was this blonde woman. Right. I don't know who she was. This is her description.
But she wasn't blonde.
Whatever she was, I'm just saying they have a description of a woman that they don't know who it is. Neither does, but that means somebody's chasing her now as another identity. She doesn't need that in her life. She wants to get.
But she needs. But here's my point: is she needs her money more?
Yeah, the money ain't gonna help her get out of that.
At the time of watching at the time while I was watching it, I thought that it was great, and I still think that it's great. But I do have questions now, wondering if she is willing to kill and kill somebody that she supposedly at one point loved or had a sort of relationship with.
Why didn't she take off these people?
Then I would think, even if it wasn't murder, she would be able to somehow get her money back. Because when you are willing to do something crazier than the person who is attacking you, then you usually win.
Yeah, but again, it would have not.
Now that's like somebody who's fought the money,
but outside of the money.
And lost.
But outside of the money. It would have put more attention
on her back.
To that.
I definitely agree with that.
And that's a problem.
I see both sides.
And, like, and that's a problem.
I don't disagree with that argument. I just don't think it's... for me, the bigger thing was, if my whole existence of getting away and living the life is this money, I don't think she would have just let it go that easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think she had a choice.
I do.
Because I really don't. So, because, again...
And it ruined for me. It just didn't work for me at all.
And at that point,
it seemed way too
convenient. One of the things that... two things Greta says is... A, you know, you're luckier that we're not worse people. And B, you can make yourself look ugly all you want. Like, it was sort of kind of like blackmail. Mm-hmm. Like, we know you can't go to the police.
Right.
Because if you go to the police, your jig is up. Mm-hmm. So, no, there's no way. She was definitely left destitute. Her only course, because she knew that Desi was there. And again, I don't think she was expecting... to go into end up in the situation that she ended up in.
Oh, of course not. She never thought she'd see
that. No, and regardless of whether she saw Nick on TV.
We're not going to convince each other. We've made the argument, so let's move on to other problems. Because it worked for you. It was completely implausible. It didn't work for me.
But I'm just taking it the next step. Like, even if she was with Desi, okay, she realized that she was going to leave him anyways. She may not have killed him, but she was definitely going to, one way, she wasn't going to stay a prisoner. That's just not within Amazing Amy's character.
But you're now making the other point. I said, why? She's not a prisoner in the damn lake house.
I really want to hear about the box office.
Box office? Oh, box office is really interesting.
What is it? $61 million is the budget?
For its production budget.
Uh-huh.
So Warner Brothers released $61 million, which, when you look at that movie and you think of a David Fincher film, I think that's actually pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. I mean, all in it was $95 million. So, and that's with, you know, hard drives and advertising, which they advertise this movie a lot.
I thought that they advertised this movie very well. I thought the marketing campaign was awesome. I loved the trailer and what I thought this movie was going to be about. They were very secretive.
What did you
secretive.
Think it was going to be about?
The way that they set it up was that she was dead and was he the murderer or not, you know? So going into this, I thought there was a dead woman and he was being accused of the murder. We find out in the movie that there isn't a dead woman. There's no murderer because there's no body.
Right.
And so I thought that was really cool. They kept it kind of a secret what the actual plot of the film was.
Yeah. And that was another thing. It didn't hurt the film for me. I didn't see the trailer, so I don't know. But I didn't, as the movie rolled out, I didn't for a second think that Ben had ever killed her.
Mm.
I knew that. I said, okay, he hasn't killed her. Great. And she's obviously set this up. So let's get to that point.
No, I remember the exact second when we saw that young woman walk in and his girlfriend. I was like, ooh.
It plays out.
Yeah, I was like, I wasn't like, oh, he did this. I was like, you know? But it all goes to the fact that he's just not a good guy.
Yeah. And I have to say, even though in my mind, for whatever reason, I knew that he hadn't killed her, it didn't ruin that part for me because I loved the fact that they were vilifying him. You wanted to, see, we got you, we got you.
On mistake.
And then when you realize he's wrongly accused and you're going, oh, no. And then it's twisting over and you find out how she's done it.
Right.
I loved all that stuff. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and from a marketing standpoint, I think they had – I think Warner Brothers had a – I think they had an uphill battle because, again, it's not an easy book. It's not an easy – it's not an easy story to stomach. It's not one that you don't want to give away any twists. It's sort of kind of heavy, and it's not about good people. So, you know, you have this movie, it's David Fincher, so you know that it's not going to necessarily be happy-go-lucky.
Oh, so you've heard of David Fincher before?
A little bit.
Oh, yeah, that's cool, because I've heard of David Fincher. Yeah. Have you heard of David Fincher? Oh, that makes three of us at the table.
But I'm not Tyler Perry.
I'm not Tyler Perry.
So. Oh, my God.
No, but so, I mean, you know that it's not going to necessarily be happy-go-lucky. I think what they did and how they marketed it, who they marketed it to, I think they did a great job for it to have the opening, you know, that they were going to have.
Yeah.
I think they did a fantastic job. They knew their audience. And they didn't try to cheat that, too. They didn't try to go for, ooh, let's make this, like let's try to get the teen audience in here, because that wasn't going to fly. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and now the other thing that really, I think, helped them is coming a week after The Equalizer, which was a rated R movie that reached out to a bit of an older audience, too. So there is, so, like, now you're giving the older rated, you're giving the older audience something to go to. Mm-hmm. You're giving them some variety. And with the publicity that the book has had, with the publicity that you had going in with the Fincher Flynn Flim Flam, you know, you had, so you're going to grab the book readers, and you're going to grab this new audience. And then you had Ben Affleck, you had a great cast. So I think marketing wise, Warner Brothers like knocked it out of the park. And I think it reached, it went well above anybody's expectations. Yeah, as far as grosses.
They said internationally 26% higher than they thought it was going to go. So,
amazing. Its domestic opening weekend gross was like $37.5 million. Not too shabby. To date, it's about $52 million. Mm-hmm. You know, it's worldwide boxes. Box office is about $90 million. Mm-hmm. So,
look at them,
you know,
making their money back.
There you go. Yeah.
And then you got Rotten. Now, here's the interesting thing. Now, on Rotten Tomatoes, it was 87%.
91 for audience, 87 for critics.
So,
which gives it like
score,
that open star tomato look.
Yeah, right. Because usually the critics and the audience are about 20% off, 20 percentage points off.
Well, what I thought was interesting is that on CinemaScore, it only got a B.
Yeah.
Which. Yeah. They relate that to
Metacritic got an 79.
Yeah, and on CinemaScore, when you get a B, the studios sort of kind of relate. Like I was thrilled to death to get a B in school.
Yeah,
but the studios look at that saying that the word of mouth might not be so great. Like they're always looking for A's,
of course.
A's.
Yeah, yeah.
B's, they're like, that's interesting. And as we're talking about it, you can see it has been polarizing. Mm-hmm. Some people have really loved the movie, and some people have not liked the movie as much, and some people have hated it.
At the end of the day, it's very different than so many things I have seen recently. Mm-hmm. It's just got a very different story that it's trying to tell, which is why I really liked it. I've seen a lot of the same. You were just comparing this just because of when they came out to Equalizer. We covered Equalizer here. I thought Equalizer was fun. I liked it.
Fun play.
This is a way more up my alley kind of movie, and I enjoyed this movie so much more. I think that it.
Well, there's so much
got
more
a story.
To deal with.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful, because you're dealing with the facade we put onto the world and to each other, especially if you're in a relationship. You're dealing with the media and what it can do to people and what, you know, their agendas.
Which is something I almost felt like when I was watching this. Yeah. I was watching the news for a while.
Yeah.
You know, when you're watching something, and you think that a guy maybe killed his wife, and you're like, oh, that asshole.
Right.
First, you're like, oh my god, that poor man. Then you're like, oh, that asshole. And then you're like,
Wait, what's going on?
The hell? So I felt like I was maybe watching a news story on, which was really cool. And it does happen. It happens in real life all of the time. We were kind of the jury here, you know, he was on trial and that was a really cool aspect for me. And it did something different than a lot of movies do. So you have to appreciate the fact that it was out of the box, period. You know,
it flips gears in a way that, you know, I know as I was reading the book, it flipped gears for me, and I knew what the twist was. I have to assume, you know, you can tell me differently. I don't want to speak for you, but it flips gears in a way that, like, the person that you felt bad for was Amazing Amy, because here she could be dead, floating in the, you know.
And because she wrote this diary, and she thought her husband was going to kill her.
And,
yeah,
and
I didn't have that feeling.
When things switch, really, so you didn't.
Well, no, again, I said,
did you know that
I didn't,
she was
I didn't,
old?
I didn't for a second think that he killed her. I knew she was in these. In my mind, I'm going, nah, she's alive and
she's alive.
Planned this. So I didn't have that, but I still loved it when they cut to her and we got to see everything she did and how she did it. I thought that was amazing.
No, I totally played right into it.
Did
at first,
you?
I thought she was dead and he didn't do it. Then I thought she was dead and he did do it. Then I saw she was alive, so nobody did it. You know, that and that, I'm assuming that's what they wanted to happen. They wanted little old me to sit there and think that. So,
and I thought, you know, that's great.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, we don't usually see those, and every once in a while, you know, these come along and we go, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I think that really helped for this movie, and we were talking about it earlier, I think performances.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, I'm not on the I hate Ben Affleck bandwagon. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, he's made some crappy movies. Who doesn't? And especially in a career that
he's had.
It's
not always the actor. Right. That's the reason. But
absolutely. Now the one that I was really, the one that I loved, and I've been becoming a fan of hers just more and more, since Reacher. The Tom Cruise movie. Mm-hmm. This is Rosamund Pike. Mm-hmm. She was in Reacher. She was in At the World's End, which mm-hmm. I loved her. And in this movie, man, like if
it's anyone, a great role for her.
It's a great role for her. And I think it's without having seen some other movies at this point, I think nominatable. I think she was really, really solid.
I think this is a career changing role for her. Mm-hmm. I think she was. I would go so far beyond solid. I think she was great. I think she knocked it out of the park. The scene that sticks out to me the most is when she does come back with the blood all over her, and then she ends up in the hospital, and she's telling her story. She reminded me of Roxy Hart. Like, I just loved this moment. Mm-hmm. I thought she nailed it. Mm-hmm. I definitely think she should be nominated.
Can I go back to the part where I was being held captive?
That was my favorite thing, because this cop's not believing her. She says, no, can I go back to
this? Exactly. She wants to interrupt my story.
And it was the look that she gave the cop.
And the look she was giving her husband, too. Yeah, she's looking at Nick, and he waves. I thought she effing nailed it.
Yeah, no, I
thought
agree.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
And going back to Ben Affleck, I thought he did a really good job. I know you said this off air, John, but I do agree that he kind of is a little aloof. You know, he's a little
sometimes. Yeah, and there's characters. There's an aloofness
he
about
underplays.
His.
And
I think it worked extremely well here because you weren't sure. It's like, well, who is he? What's and he's kind of so removed, which was the character, obviously.
Like his aloofness too is some of the thing that brought up the ire of a lot of people, like including the media. They're like going, look at him. He's like smiling.
So
and
that
it's
really
like
works.
Taking pictures with girls and smiling, whatever it is.
Just trying to be polite.
I'm not on the I don't like Ben Affleck train. I really like Ben Affleck. I mean, it starts because Good Will Hunting's my favorite movie of all time and ends with the fact that he's a boss in the town, everything, whatever. I love Ben Affleck. I thought that he was really, really good fit for this role. I thought he did a great job. I don't think it's Oscar nominee worthy because I just don't think it was as big of a role opportunity.
But he didn't have as much to work with. And his arc, you didn't really, you know.
Exactly.
You get to really go to the depths, so to speak.
But who I do think did equally as amazing job as all these other big, big players is his sister.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Neil Patrick Harris. So the girl who played Margot Dunn, Carrie Coon, comes over from, I mean, she's been in a bunch of things, but she comes over for me from The Leftovers, which is an HBO series that is a summer series that just went on this past year that is my favorite show on television currently. I thought that she's amazing in that show.
Yeah.
She was awesome in this movie. Such a different role for her from that. I thought she nailed it too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her.
I liked her. And she's great because she is, in a sense, she's the voice of reason.
Mm-hmm. She's kind of us. You know, we don't know.
But she's gonna, she's the voice of reason, but she's going to support regardless.
Oh, yeah.
And she even says so, and you believe it, that she's gonna support her brother, her twin, you know, regardless.
Every once in a while, it just got me confused. Every time he'd say go, he'd call her go. It's like, why that? And then,
How'd
he say? What? That makes no sense.
It was weird. I love the sibling bond here. I thought it really worked. I've actually watched a bunch of interviews of the two of them together now, and they seem to have that, like, sibling rivalry relationship on camera always. Yeah. So I thought that was really great casting, too. I thought that everybody other than NPH did a great job.
I have to say about that part, and because going back to Neil Patrick Harris, for me, it was that it wasn't written enough for him. It wasn't crazy enough.
That's why I was saying it's not his fault, because I thought he was doomed from the start. And the big surprise for me was, oh my, Tyler Perry. What happened there? He killed it. He was great. He was an awesome awesome addition to this film. I was never expecting that. Mm-hmm. Ever. I mean, no, yes.
No.
I'm not.
I wasn't
as
surprised
like,
by it by, I'm by not, you. Like, but, I'm not, because I've so seen him do a couple of things where I go, yeah. So, but I thought he served the piece very well. Yeah.
I thought he was great. I wasn't expecting to like him so much.
I thought it was well cast and well acted for sure.
But I was thinking too, like Lawrence Fishburne could have really played that role really well.
What did they say? Alec Baldwin, I think, is what they said that the role was supposed to be.
Yeah, he might have been more
something.
Like the.
No, well, if we can get into what like they look, who they considered for roles, that might be fun.
And I had no problem with Tyler Perry. I'm just not as over the moon. I mean, he was fine.
I'm blanking on her name. The cop. I thought she was great.
Oh, the cop was great.
Oh, Detective Rhonda Boney, who's Kim Dickens, who comes over. She's been in a million things, but I know her most from Sons of Anarchy, where she plays like the lead prostitute kind of woman. Mm-hmm. So this was a very different role for her. Mm-hmm. I thought she did a great job, and I thought her sidekick did a great job.
Patrick Fugit.
I thought that was great.
And again, Patrick Fugit, I'm like going, God, you've come a long way since Almost Famous.
Yeah.
I was like, holy cow. Mm-hmm. No, I really like the cast. I don't have the Neil Patrick Harris problem. I thought everybody.
That's isolated to Roxy. That's okay.
But I honestly.
I don't know. It might not be. I mean.
No, I mean on this panel.
You know, and I think that again, performance wise, okay, for a movie like this, you really need the solid performances, I think, for it to work on all cylinders. Now, is this a best picture? Best picture category kind of film? Maybe not, but. Mm. Right now, like I said, I'd put it in my top 10. I think Fincher's direction was spot on. Mm-hmm. However, I will say this. I think I liked Girl with the Dragon Tattoo a little bit better, mm-hmm. but not by much. This is definitely going to be worth a second and or a third viewing. I'll get it on like Blu-ray and such. I really think that the performances were where they needed to be for it to work. You needed a strong actress to carry off that Amy Dunn character, because if she went way over the line, then it's caricature. Mm-hmm. She was awesome.
Let's talk about who she could have been if she wasn't who she was.
You mean
Rosamund Pike?
Yes.
Right.
Cool. So here were the people that were thrown out there. Charlize Theron, who I thought would have done an awesome job.
I think she could have done it equally as good.
She would have done a monster of a job.
So there are people like that. But then on this list was Julianne Hough, which had me scratching my head and rolling my eyes. What? I mean, what?
Well, she was available.
I don't know. I thought that the weirdest on this list of the people I heard was that. Olivia Wilde, I thought, was kind of weird. I don't think Emily Blunt would have done the best job with it. But I do think
seen Emily Blunt.
You could have?
I could have seen her.
Charlize Theron, Natalie Portman, Rooney Mara. I think that they all would have done a great job. But I think that the best person for the job got the job.
Which, and it was interesting because I don't know that if you had
and
told
you're missing
me
one person,
who, if you had, if I hadn't
Reese Witherspoon,
of course, she developed it for crying.
I don't think she would have done as good of a job.
What was it? Because if you didn't know who had done it or hadn't seen the movie and you'd saw the list of people who were being considered for it, I don't know that Rosamund Pike would be the one I'd go,
true.
So for that reason, I think, wow, amazing for her. Congratulations to her. Because
that's why I think it's a career changing movie.
I do too. I agree. Too. And I don't even necessarily, I thought she did an amazing job with what she was given. I'm not even a big fan of what she was given to play. So,
well, so that's
okay.
That's
then,
great indeed. No, I thought she did again. For me, I think at this point in time, where we are in the year, mm-hmm. I think nominatable. I mean,
because she got to play so many different sides to a character.
Do you think that should be the only nomination of this film?
For me, yeah, I mean, cinematography I thought was great. Mm-hmm. Editing, you know, David Fincher, I believe, will get his day. I just don't think, just seeing what our lineup is, mm-hmm. if we don't come out with many things that are better, but I think there's going to be, I think the movie is going to face some very stiff competition. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't throw it out just yet. Mm-hmm. You got to see what's coming up, but we've got now until December. There's a lot of movies. I think that this movie is a great way to kick off I think it's a great way to start talking about the Academy, mm-hmm. and talking about Best Actress. And I think we've got other movies that are coming out very soon now to get into that fray. But we'll see what competition it faces.
As I was watching it, and even as we're discussing it now, it never even entered my idea that it would be an,
even Rosamund. Well, how about Rosamund Pike?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Because of the breadth and the right. of what she got to play and all the different sides of that, which was great, and because it was such a surprise in the sense that. I didn't know. I hadn't seen this.
And it doesn't take anything away from me. Like, even if I don't find that this may not be, like, best picture quality, it's still, like, I mean, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo wasn't, like, best picture quality for me, but I loved it. And I really liked this movie a lot, too.
I don't know if I said it earlier, but I thought it was an extremely well-crafted movie, the way it was all put together. I was not as much of a fan as the pacing of it. I think, I don't know if we talked about that or if I'm remembering that from an echo. I didn't like, I mean, the editing was fine except for that part of it. Again, for me, it was 30 minutes too long. I didn't need it. Half the stuff that I was seeing went, just go on forever. Then I had all these fades to black. I'm going, what? I felt like I was actually reading the thing. I remember in the movie, I'm going, why is this taking so long? I'm actually looking at my watch.
I didn't have the same problem. I didn't have an issue with the length. But Dimitri, your question to me was, how did I feel about...
my question was, you know, as far as our nomination, like... category, do you feel that it's nomination
worthy? I think she was nomination worthy. I think that she was. I think
how
that
about the movie itself,
I thought that the movie probably isn't, although I do think that we shouldn't, it's so hard because I still think, oh, five movies a year is this top five, but we've opened it up to 10, so it's like, now I think a lot of things that aren't nomination worthy are nominated. If this got nominated, would I be like, oh my God, I never would have seen that coming? No. No, absolutely not. But
are you kidding me?
No, absolutely not. No. I think it is a very good movie. No. I think it did the best job telling this story it could have done. This wasn't my favorite story I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. I really liked it, but it wasn't my absolute favorite. But I think that they told it very, very well. Mm-hmm. So do I think that it could be nominated? Maybe. I probably think it won't, though.
One thing I did forget, the other possibility could be adapted screenplay.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
I was thinking about that.
I wouldn't agree with, but...
Yeah. It could go
adapted. But not because it wasn't written. I just didn't like the... Well, it's hard to say because... Obviously, it's her story. She adapted it well. It's her own story.
Yeah,
right? Too much of it for me didn't work, and too much of it was inconsistent, and... there was much of it that I did really like.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because you talk about length. We talk about, you know, we've talked about whether we like the length or not. Yeah. I thought the pacing was fine. It's funny, in interviews with Kirk Baxter, the editor, and also seeing, like, if ever you have a David Fincher, like, Blu-ray, if you have, like, the Criterion of, like, The Game, or even Seven, or even if you have Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and you get behind the filmmaking process with him, he is a very meticulous, very meticulous director who takes his time in ensuring...
Takes his time getting the film, takes his time editing it, and he doesn't mind taking his time watching it.
And he gives his editor, one of the things that the editor...
I see what you did
love,
there.
Yeah, he gives his editor coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, apparently it's rumored that this movie had 500 hours of footage. 500. So to whittle it down to 2 hours and 40 minutes, that's...
Exactly.
Or 220, I should say.
We could have had a 100-hour movie. How'd you feel then?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know what the, quote, average rate is, but... That seems excessive. And 50 takes on a...
Yeah, 50 to 60 takes. And, you know, and he takes multiple scenes. So he gives plenty of coverage. And they're able to, you know... I would say that being an editor of one of his movies has to be, like... You have to have patience and you have to be a puzzle solver. Mm-hmm. Because, like, what... If a notebook... If my cup is placed here and I'm like, well, let's try this. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Maybe if it's like this over here, and then
the continuity between it all,
and then the editor's got to, like, go, okay, I'm going to take this shot. But I do appreciate Fincher. Number one, there's a color scheme to his movies, and they're all usually pretty. There's a
muted,
subdued. It's like, I call it the Cameron blue. Like, James Cameron films with this kind of a blue. No, whether it's in an Avatar or a Terminator
blue
movie. Watch J. Aliens.
Abrams flare.
Yeah, he's got the lens flare. Fincher has his color palette as well. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Seven, Fight Club. They all have this very similar thing. And I love the way his movies look. In this particular movie, Gone Girl, it really captured this moody, creepy kind of tone. And then when you throw in the soundtrack, too, which also it doesn't like it doesn't over punctuate, but man, it just sets in the moodiness of what's going on. Yeah, it's I really like the way he puts together a movie.
I can see why.
Yeah,
I agree. I thought that it looked great. I like the way it looked. I like the way it sounded, which I'm sure we'll talk about. I thought it was really, really good job.
Yeah.
I like the house. I can't say that I'm a huge fan of the look of it, but it was fine. But I like the house that it was so, again, all a facade. It was just kind of like this house that you'd see.
Their house.
Was
like a white picket fence type house.
Well, not only a white picket fence, but it was almost like a commercial grade house, which was supposed to have the facade of it being an amazing house. But there really wasn't much in it.
Yeah.
Kind of like they are. There's not a lot of depth there. Right. So for those parts.
That's why they're in love.
Exactly. So that I like.
Coming back to it.
But, you know, they're going back to the music, they were talking about how, you know, it's widely reported that Fincher wanted to, it was in a office or a chiropractor office or something like that, and heard some music that was supposed to make him calm, but it didn't have the exact opposite effect and that's what he wanted Reznor to do and stuff like that. And I actually don't remember the music having too much of an effect on me, but it doesn't often. So what did you guys think of the music in terms
don't
of
feel the reason?
Yeah, but I'm well, talking about source. The score of it. So.
I know.
You know, it's really interesting. Like,
I didn't really feel unsettled. It wasn't like the music and the I didn't get the feeling. I more often than not was just like, can we move this along? so I didn't get the feeling like, oh my god, I'm unsettled.
No, I definitely did. It clearly worked better on me because I was sitting there like, oh, did he not? You know, and a lot of that has to do with sound and feeling kind of anxious for him, for me, not knowing if something's going to jump out. I thought that it did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it wasn't anything like this. Wasn't that it was. That it was manipulating us to feel unsettled. I mean, we have a story that's pretty unsettling, I think, to begin with. This music, and again, to me, it was very, very similar to the music of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And if you listen
to the same scores, by the way.
Nine Inch Nails, people,
which
yeah.
Which is very different from
the other guy?
Atticus Ross.
Name. Thank you.
And, you know, it's clearly like you can put it on as background music, and I have the scores, but then if you listen to Social Network, it's a completely different. It's a different score to set a different mood, and I think
as it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Gone Girl, I really think again, you know, there's nothing bombastic about it. It's not symphonic, so to speak. Like, you know, it's not a John Williams score. But then again, it doesn't play like, doesn't have screeching violins in it either to set up tension as they're going through, you know. I think it's the fact that it's sort of underplayed helps raise that level of disparity.
Right. I can't say I noticed it the whole time, which is good, I think.
Yeah, I usually think that.
If something
I don't really
is too
want to
jar,
notice
yeah.
the music all the time. I want it to affect me, but I don't want to really
except
know.
For that score.
Yeah.
This
one didn't. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if there's any other song that I remember from the movie except for that.
Yeah, it's the one. The one. We opened with it.
Don't fear the
hopefully region. You guys will let us close with it.
I always just relate that to Halloween and Will Ferrell, Saturday Night Live, Christopher Walken sketch.
Oh, of course. Yes.
But, you know, I thought the score was good. You know, one little note of trivia, David Fincher helped a directing buddy out.
Oh, yes,
his,
please.
His good friend, Steven Soderbergh, who I had no idea, but apparently...
You had no idea he was
I
good
no
friend
idea.
With him, or you had
no... I had no idea that he was a good director. No, I'm kidding. I had no idea that Steven Soderbergh is an importer-exporter of liquor. Something called...
I like him even better.
Singanese. Singani.
So now we're doing product placement.
Right? So now we're doing product placement for Steven
good
Soderbergh.
Good luck, Steven Soderbergh. Yeah, vodka line.
He's like, hey, you have this? I'll put it in.
Yeah, bring it out. That's fine. Yeah, just go ahead. Bring it out right on the table.
And he's like, hey, one of your characters has a bar. Wow, nice. It'd be so great to see that. And, and so we see Ben Affleck, but I think that's sort of kind of cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know it going in, and now when I go to see the movie again, I'll...
Now you know.
Yeah, and apparently it's a very... it's supposed to be very expensive liquor.
So what did you guys think of something that we haven't addressed that is very off topic, but I just thought that I would mention it because it's been a big deal, and honestly, to me, it was not even noticeable, about the fact that we got full nudity. I mean,
didn't care.
Did anybody think about it? I mean, I honestly didn't even really pay attention to it.
No,
I didn't.
people have been asking Ben Affleck about it a lot, like a lot. And it was his first time being fully nude. I didn't even notice.
Jennifer Gardner commented on it, actually. And what she said was, thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally, I didn't
know. That's my girl.
Yeah, I don't.
I figured she was the voice for,
I don't know. You know, I was like,
whatever.
You know, full, what, it was so brief.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Yeah.
Now, well, the one thing, well, that was like, another major thing that I've read about is that did either of you find this movie to be misogynistic and feminine, you know, and anti-feminist?
Anti-feminist? No.
No, I didn't.
In this movie. Because that's another...
I thought it was a strong female character.
It's one woman. She's not speaking for the entire... gender.
And we also had a female cop, and we I don't really understand
that. Know, I'm very happy that you brought that up, because one, there was a great article in Forbes that says that this movie is about, you know, it's really a feministic approach. It goes, when you look at how many female characters are in this movie, and how each of their characters, whether you agree with them or not, have their opinions and are able to voice their opinions in a somewhat of an intellectual way.
Not to mention that it's a woman writer. Mm-hmm. So, how could...
Well, I can understand one point of view, because when we hear her in her dialogue, when she's talking about, when she's driving on the road, she's talking about, here's how, this is what women do.
I know I don't. So what the hell?
I know, but that, my point is, if that's all you took from it and you go, well, see, because this is how, but that's one person's view of what women do.
If a man says this is what men do to people, I don't know.
So I didn't, you know, if you were only going to take that context, then okay, I can, but that's not what the movie is.
Well, I'm going to quote Miss Flynn, because she, I think, actually said something really cool. And this was in an interview with The Guardian that I had read. And she was questioned whether feminism is really only girl power and you go girl and empower yourself and be the best you can.
You go, girlfriend.
She's like, for me, it's the ability to have women who are bad characters. They can be bad too. Why don't you can have a female villain? One thing that really frustrates me is the idea that women are innately good, innately nurturing. In literature, they can be dismissively bad, trampy, vampy, bitchy types, but there's still a big pushback against the idea that women can just be pragmatically evil, bad, and selfish.
Yeah, I don't get this part, this argument, because I'm just, I don't think an author should take the responsibility of saying, I'm going to have my main character speak for everybody of that particular ilk.
No way.
I think that's ridiculous.
And for somebody to put that on another person is very unfair.
No, it's ridiculous.
I thought that it was, I enjoyed the women characters in this. I thought there was three main women characters, because I'm not counting the mom, because she had a very small role to me. And I thought that they were all very different. We had the sister who took care of her brother. We had the cop who
had an unconditional love, a wife who had completely conditional love.
Right.
And then we had a cop who was completely pragmatic in a totally different way.
So I thought that they were all shown very different. The question was, do I agree with that? No, I completely disagree. Yeah. And I'm a woman, in case you can't tell by my voice.
It has actually been one of the main criticisms of the movie.
Really? I think it's misogynistic she's... Why is it
every single movie that has strong female characters is considered misogynistic these days, or any minority for that matter, any movie that has like very strong black characters, people are saying, is it, do people paint this in one way or the other? Unless you are a all white male cast, then there's going to be controversy around something.
There's
going to
be controversy about that. Why did you do that?
And now in 2014, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I also think, though, too, there has been a history lately, and there has been when you look at Hermione, you know, she just gave this great speech about, you know, women in Hollywood. Like, there's been this push to make women smart. Emma Watson. Thank you very much. There's been a push, and Gina Davis is another one. Mm-hmm. Not enough good roles out there for women.
Yeah, but this is a great role.
I think that's true, but this happens to be a movie that has great ones.
That has great roles for women, and they don't get caught in the Smurfette syndrome, where they're the only women. The Smurfette syndrome is an actual syndrome, that says that you have one woman who's surrounded by a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the males will dictate what's going on.
Right.
And doesn't factor from that in, these aren't necessarily women. Again, all the women that are in Gone Girl, you mm-hmm. know, they're not, their lives aren't predicated on the man that they're with. You know,
yeah, it, it's just well, so wasn't that. I yeah. just, I have a well, really hard time.
I don't know,
time.
Maybe Amy's is in the case.
Yeah, I guess. So,
but I don't think it's misogynistic.
We really, really didn't talk about, I know we don't have that much time left, but also just bringing in the amazing Amy aspect of it all.
Aspect of
what did you guys think about that?
Well, again, that played a major factor in the book as well. Mm-hmm. And knowing that she was pressured, and knowing that amazing
Amy, she could,
never,
Amy, measure up.
She could never measure up, and she never got all the great things that amazing Amy did get, even though this character was supposed to be heavily based on their daughter. You know, there's really not, I didn't find the parents likable in the book, and they aren't likable in the movie as well. And again, they're all, they're predicated on their success in trying to go back into the, like, again, what was she, they went to a party where they were doing an anniversary of Amazing Amy, and they were like, come on, this is gonna bring me back into the limelight again. And there were New York socialites that lived a certain kind of lifestyle. You know, I also like how Gone Girl also talks about how the economy affects, you know, things are going okay for Amy and Nick, you know, but then unfortunately Nick
could have lived a very happy, normal life,
You know, with sugar.
Had the economy not gone to shit.
The economy not gone to shit. Right. And the mother didn't have her her cancer, and they had to go back to Memphis, I believe it
was. I don't buy it.
So. I
don't I think it would have gone. I don't buy that that's why the relationship to. I mean,
no.
I think that you are either the.
Lying,
I think you're either the kind of person who's capable of something or not. And clearly, Amy is capable of murder and of trying to get her husband the death penalty. So, regardless of what the catalyst was for that, it would have been something at some point.
Yeah, but
she didn't like the color cat he picked.
No, I know, but things obviously. And again,
cat,
and it's brought up, and again, it is a difference in the book, and that he didn't mind that it wasn't in the movie. Like, but they bring up the economy a lot because
that mall
they go into,
that mall.
Remember the mall where they found that guy who said, "Oh yeah, I know her. She was looking for a gun."
Oh, right. Sure. The down under. I didn't even know.
Gotcha,
I didn't even realize that was a mall.
Yeah, no, that was a mall. In
it
the
just
story,
looked like a this gang. Zone.
No, it's a mall.
Subway.
And in the book, anyways, like this mall was supposed to bring this little town in Memphis. It was supposed to bring it back to life, and it did.
In Memphis,
isn't it Memphis?
Missouri.
It was supposed to bring
Missouri.
What back to what?
The town.
Yeah,
the
it's supposed town to bring
they,
in.
It was supposed to bring
in
business. It was supposed to bring this little town back to life, and it did for a little bit, and then the
and
economy
then
tanked, and then the mall died. People lost their jobs, and they didn't destroy the mall, so it just is left there.
Wow.
For the transients to go in as a constant reminder of all the people who lost their... I mean, so the mall itself sort of
That's
kind of plays that part. That, and again, not that I missed it in the movie, and I understand for taking it out. Like, the father had a little bit of a bigger piece in the book as well. But again, not that they trimmed it down somewhat. Mm-hmm. I didn't miss that
Some
at all.
Some of that was missing for me just because, okay, I get that, she can never measure up to... Amazing Amy, so she's insecure in that way, and you know.
So let's just go kill people.
It's like some of who she was and how she became what she came was missing for me. Is kind of, and that's why I felt it was inconsistent.
Well, I heard that we heard more about this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, in the books about the whole concept of the cool girl and him wanting the cool girl, the cool girl. So her, we saw a little
that's
in the movie
became.
Of her trying to be that, but I heard in the book it was really like driven into you that he wanted a cool girl.
But it wasn't just cool girl; it was the cool couple.
Couple.
They two were cool. Like, she was the cool girl. Like, she wasn't going to be the woman that gets jealous if Nick goes out. She was the cool girl. She was the people that talked about. But they were, in a sense, too, the cool couple that people would look up to because they had such a happy and loving relationship. So,
and they still do. Yeah.
Now, another piece of trivia, too, and I'm going to change the mood here. Another thing, kudos Ben Affleck in the movie while they were filming. There is a scene where he's in an airport. He was asked to wear a Yankees hat.
I know.
And Mr. Affleck said, David, I love you. He's like,
I'm not going to do it.
I can't do it. He goes, you have no idea what that's going to bring. Like,
yeah,
what pain
too
that will bring to me if I do
they
that.
They settle on the Mets.
You know,
they settle on the Mets.
I'm going, can you imagine? Because, you know, you're an actor. It's the character wearing it. I'm not wearing it, but no. I'm going to get so much crap for this. I can't do it.
I'm not
going to
do it.
I'm not going to do it.
So, I love that. That's so, my boy.
Luckily, New York. Luckily, New York has two teams.
Yeah,
and they give them the Mets, and that's fine. I just think that's
Nation.
Very, very funny. 26 games back.
That is ridiculous.
This past
but okay. All right, that is funny.
But yeah, I think
I can't.
It's great.
Sorry, no, I do it. I mean, the character. It's right for the character, but I just can't do it.
I just can't do it.
I can do the nudity, but I can't wear the New York Yankee hat.
Well, nobody from Boston is going to complain about the nudity.
No. Oh, really?
So, and then regarding the killer smile, like the. Ben Affleck, that was the scene that took apparently the most we did was 60 takes.
The killer smile?
The killer smile.
Remind me, help me out.
He was supposed to do like this killer smile.
Oh, it was for the poster?
I don't know if it was for a photo shoot. I think it was for a going into an interview, or he had to have like a certain smile.
Uh-huh.
And 60 takes. And it's,
did we see this in the movie? I don't remember him practicing a specific
smile. He wasn't
smile.
Practicing, uh-huh. But they took 60 takes.
Oh, okay, got it.
And he had to get this mm-hmm. particular smile for this one scene done. And he was like, David and I were in sync. It would take 7 or 8 takes. We've gotten into the groove. There's a scene walking along the beach with my mother-in-law.
Yeah, I saw it.
Everything was supposed to be in concert. We shot it 45 times one day, 36 times the next day. That's insane.
I love perfectionists.
Patience. Yep.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, gotta love it.
I mean, congratulations. I mean,
I love the
success, but I just think that's ridiculous.
I love the trivia.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Yeah. You know, but and again, like, I'm looking forward to the Blu-ray because it'll go into a lot of this. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot more. So, you know, and plus, like, Fincher's appreciation for film, and I'm not talking, like, actual celluloid. I'm just talking about his film history and how he directly, whether you say lifts or pays homage to, he's not so bad as Brian De Palma when it comes to Alfred Hitchcock. Okay. And I love Brian De Palma as well. But, you know, the way that he does go with the character and what made Hitchcock Hitchcock. I find this movie actually to be very Hitchcockian, where things are not exactly what they seem at all. You know, he really does go in the dark underside belly of marriage. Things are not, and then he switches, he gives a twist, and they're all, in a sense, humanistic people. And that's where what makes Hitchcock great is that he put real humanistic characters who had their flaws. Mm-hmm. You know, and he puts them in these, like, bizarre...
I'm going to say these were people a little more than flawed, but still in love.
Yeah.
And on that note, friends...
All right, that's a good place to end. All right, last thoughts.
Overall, I did get nitpicky during this podcast, but I really did enjoy this film. I thought that the story was interesting, kept me on my toes, and I liked it a lot.
Go ahead, Dimitri.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan. There really wasn't too much for me to be nitpicking on. I thought it was a really faithful adaptation for you book readers out there. I think you'll like it too. And if you have read the book and saw the movie, let us know what you thought. I thought as an adaptation, it was one of the most faithful adaptations that you can have. It didn't disappoint outside of the Fincher Flynn Flim Flam. I thought it was really well done, and kudos.
And I guess I'm in the minority because I, as much as I liked it, I had my own issues with it. I don't know that I would be telling people, go. It's got to be, it's amazing. Because it was,
We are everywhere on the spectrum and in between.
Yeah.
That's what makes talking about movies so much fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let them know where they can find you, Roxy.
You guys can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
And you can find me at DMovies1701.
You can't find me anywhere but here. So thanks very much for listening to another Anatomy movie. We'll talk to you next time.
We found you.
Where's Fear the Reaper? Fear the Reaper.
Let's bump it.
Let's go out on that.
Well.
All right. Well.
We'll save it for Halloween.
And that was a bust.
And on that note,
I guess we feared the Reaper too much. And good night, everyone.
From producers.
actors Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.